Good morning. You know, the last 2 weeks, Kay has played beautiful pieces, but I've noticed something about us. We seem to only really be capable of one major applause per service, right? So earlier, Kay doesn't know I'm going to talk about this. Earlier, the choir sang. Somebody even whooped at that. Last week, Sophia sang. She got a round of applause. Let's give Kay a round of applause, because it was... The last two offertories have been phenomenal. All your offertories are great. The last two have been phenomenal. And I feel like we almost got there, but not quite. So maybe New Year's resolution, more than one round of applause per service. I was thinking about that today as we come to this Sunday of illumination. If you've been with us for Advent, you know that we have eschewed the traditional Advent, hope, joy, peace, and love, in favor of the traditional classical stages of the Christian pilgrimage, beginning with the story of Daniel, pairing this with the kind of narrative lectionary understanding, beginning with the story of Daniel in the lion's den, and being a story of awakening, being awake to a larger reality in the world than that of present circumstances, heading from there to everyone's favorite purgation, in which we talk about setting aside that which is encumbranced us from being one with God. And after we have repented and set aside, we come to the Sunday in which we discuss illumination. And that brings me back to Kay. And Kay, I was thinking about in the applause because I found out this week, I was very close to the last accompanist at our church in North Carolina. And in the midst of our time together, she developed stage 4 ovarian cancer. And she's okay, but she's starting to have some recurrence. But I was thinking about her and being illuminated. Linda Jones is kind of one of a kind, despite the fact that many people are named Linda Jones. If you look them up on Facebook, this one is one of a kind. She's a girl from the mountains of North Carolina, and you can make all the assumptions you want to about what that means in terms of one relatedness to hillbilly. She is a little bit of a hillbilly, but she's highly educated and a phenomenal musician. And at the beginning of my tenure at that church, she was also the interim music director. And we had a particular woman in that church who, I couldn't even remember her name. I had to think about it for a while. Her name was Valerie. I've remembered now. Valerie was also one of a kind. Maybe not in the same way as Linda. Valerie was known for her ability to complain. She was the first person who ever addressed me immediately after a sermon to confront me about one. She also was the first person I ever heard in a business meeting call another member of the church an idiot. Over a couch. She wanted to buy a couch for a sitting area. The other person disagreed about the couch, and Valerie called the other person an idiot. Valerie was special. When you were, I was 28 when I started pastoring that church. And at 28, it's the first time you're doing any of these things, and you're very fragile sometimes. And Valerie was very good at breaking fragile people. Valerie was mean. And you think, hey, maybe pastors shouldn't tell stories about people, right? I stick more to the idea that if you're being mean, I get to tell people that you've been being mean. Like, you made that bed. You're going to lie in it. Valerie one day got on to me about something and just crushed me. And I can still remember Linda called me and said, let's go over to Starbucks. And we sat. And Linda is just she's a little bit of a larger woman. She's very boisterous, just so cheery. And she said, you got to stop. I said, what? She's like, you're doing everything you can to worry about Valerie. You cannot win that. Okay? She said, and even if you could, you shouldn't. She said, we're not called to be people who are so focused on the negativity. 3 years later, they drained 25 liters of fluid off of her stomach from the ovarian cancer that had produced stuff. She was at stage 4, and she went into total remission. She's had a little bit come back, I just found out this week. But through that entire journey, when she went bald and she wore a bright pink wig to play piano in church, I have seen here as well, but I saw what joy in the face of devastation was supposed to look like. I saw what it meant to be illumined, to be woke up, and to set aside. She was getting rid of that which was holding her down, and she came to a place where she was joyful in the midst of her suffering. Not only that, but when she was in the hospital and we would go to see her, she was more concerned about me than about herself. She was more concerned about her doctors and the fact that they were North Carolina fans instead of Wake Forest fans. She was very upset about that. Here's the thing. We cannot be illuminated. We cannot see the light in the darkness until we have been woken up, until we have set aside that which encumbrances, that which holds us down, man. We cannot see the light until then. But when we do, two things will happen. We will find joy in all things, and we will understand that our joy is intrinsically connected to the well-being of those around us. It's what Isaiah says. This section from Isaiah that Jesus uses for his first sermon in his hometown. Don't worry, we're going to talk more about Jesus' take on it in a few weeks. But in this, the last Old Testament reading in the narrative lectionary before we come to Mary's Magnificat, we come to an Isaiah who is experiencing the return of his people. They've been exiled, and now they're coming back to a city and a place and a system full of devastation. And when they are coming back, what he says is, "Now I'm anointed. And what I'm anointed for is the release of the captives, the sight to the blind, the year of the Lord's favor. I'm anointed to say that we are in this together. Yes, we will rebuild these cities. And we will rebuild them and be used by God to the degree that the world, the foreigners, the nations, will know of our God because of us. But we will rebuild them with the captives and with the blind and with the brokenhearted, because we cannot bind the city until we set them free and bind them up." It is easy to live isolated. Yeah? It's easy for me. I'm an only child of only children, right? I dig my space. But all of us, it's easier to do it ourselves, right? It's so much easier to do it ourselves. It's like teaching a child to tie shoes. You know? I could do that a lot faster than you can, buddy. But somehow along the way, we understand that if we don't lift up others with us, then we are never going to get where we're supposed to be going. That metaphor works really well for tying shoes, by the way. We are called to be concerned for the last and the least and the broken and the blind and the outsiders. And until our concern for them is equal to our concern for ourselves, we have not been illuminated. We're not there. As we continue to journey towards this manger, towards this baby Jesus, we have this mystery of incarnation that is scandalous, that God would become one of us, that God would care so much for the plight of a broken and failing creation that he would save it from within. And yet, we too are called to be those who do not empirically rescue people from afar, but get near and hold them until we are one with them. That is really awkward. It is really frowned upon to care so deeply in our world. And it is the only way forward on our path of becoming closer to God. We cannot get closer to God until we are closer to our neighbors. Next week, we're going to move. By the way, Jeff and Anna did a great job lighting the candle I told them to light. It's supposed to be the pink Sunday. I'm aware of that. Okay? Like, look, we all know I'm like the most liturgically sound person you've ever met. Except for not being that. But next week, we're going to talk about union with God, and we're going to talk about the person of Mary, who experiences union with God in a way that is distinct and yet opens to us an opportunity to really understand what it means to be abandoned to God working in us. But here's the thing. Until we are caring for our neighbors, we will never be that open. We will never be open enough for God to move through us in that way. Until we are out there looking for the blind and the brokenhearted and the prisoner. The great news is that illumination is available to everyone. It doesn't matter how much school you went to, doesn't matter how well you read, doesn't matter, nothing. Doesn't matter if you're black or white or gay or straight or single or married or divorced. It doesn't matter. What we learn is that God is offering illumination to everyone. But part of being illuminated is learning that your neighbor is illuminated too. So, here's the homework. Go out and find some light. I don't mean at Walgreens, where you make a run on the LED lights because they never burn out. I don't mean in your fireplace. I don't mean with the people you like. I mean, go out and find some light in the hard places. Because it's there, waiting to reflect God's love in a deeper way to us. Amen.